You are listening to the Pacifica Network's coverage of the Green Party National Convention from Houston. My name is Mark Babawi, and our producer for this wonderful adventure of 4 hours of live radio in an open hall with a public address system that's piping in noise from the convention floor is Otis McClay. We've had the good fortune to have sitting with us for quite a while now, David Cobb, former presidential candidate for the Green Party, and one of the people involved with the move to amend, which you alluded to very briefly, David, but I think it touches on one of the most important issues, really, in everything. And I'll explain what I mean. For people who don't know Move to Amend, and hopefully people have heard of Citizens United, and these things are all connected. The idea behind Move to Amend is to remove corporate personhood and to remove corporate funding in politics. And the decision of Citizens United was basically to do the opposite, to recognize the existence of corporate personhood, which already was on the books, and to allow corporations, money equals free speech, we can't restrict free speech, therefore corporations can give as much money as they want. Therefore, the average taxpayer or citizen who doesn't have this sort of resources, well, you're locked out. The corporate process fully owns the democratic process, the election process. And so all of these things are very much connected, and we left off where I think is a very important connection between money, corporations, politics, and media, which is part of the reason the Pacifica exists, but I think also part of the reason that the Green Party is getting the sort of support that it's getting now, that the Libertarians with Gary Johnson are getting, and that certainly the Sanders campaign got before he, in my opinion, caved. And, you know, ceded to Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you want to comment on any of that. It's a bit of a rant more than a question.
Well, I think that what you've done is put a lot on the table, and I will try to unpack it a little bit. Move to Amend is a campaign to abolish the illegitimate, court-created, completely ludicrous idea that corporations are persons with inherent and inalienable constitutional rights, and also the equally odious, also court-created idea that money is First Amendment protected political speech. See, Mark, as a lawyer, what I know is this. Our sacred right to self-government has been stolen from us by these doctrines. They're not just individual court cases. They are doctrines by which the ruling elite are able to overturn any democratically enacted law. It's not just campaign finance law, environmental protection laws, worker safety laws, public health laws. A whole myriad of laws are overturned on this outrageous idea that corporations have constitutional rights. So Move to Amend exists and came into being precisely because of the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case you described in 2010. Mark, we were 12 people in a living room. Today, we're 408,000 people and growing every day. We've helped 17 states call for a constitutional amendment. We've had 600 communities pass resolutions of support at the city council or county commissioner level. And my favorite objective number is we've been on 350 ballots. That's not just where city council members are voting, but ordinary people are voting. Do you support the abolition of corporate constitutional rights and money of speech? Mark, we've been on 350 ballots across this country. Guess how many we've won?
Optimistically, I'd like to say 350.
And well, your optimism is well placed, my friend. We won every single one of them. And here's the thing. Yes, that includes San Francisco, Boston, Madison, you know, the liberal places. Right. You know where else we won? Salt Lake City, Utah. We won in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is the hometown of Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker. Y'all, they haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress in 40 years in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Move to Amend was on the ballot in that jurisdiction. We won 70% of the vote. We were on the ballot in Montana. Yes, Pacifica listeners, that Montana, one of the most politically, culturally conservative places in this country, Move to Amend was all on the ballot. We won 74% of the vote. Here is the point that I'm making. Liberals, conservatives, moderates, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents, you know, there is no group of people who do not understand that corporations have hijacked this country, that have hijacked these governing institutions, have hijacked our media, have hijacked our healthcare. And what we understand is it's going to actually take a movement of us to actually assert our right to self-government. And here's the second thing I'm going to say. We have to stop saying we're going to retake our country or reclaim reclaim our government. We never actually had it. There's always been a ruling elite. You know, before he passed away, Howard Zinn, the great historian, supported Move to Amend. And as any good organizer, when he said, yes, I'll support and endorse Move to Amend, I asked for a quote, right? If you're going to endorse me, then I want more. Every good organizer knows that trick, right? Mark, it's a paraphrase, but here is in essence what he said. I'll never forget the words. He said, Howard Zinn says, quote, many people, liberals especially, will go apoplectic over the Citizens United decision. They will say, the rich have stolen our elections. The rich are using the judicial system against us. But the reality, says Zinn, the rich have always controlled our elections. They have always used the courts against us. But now it is being done explicitly. End quote. And Mark and Pacific listeners, I at David Cobb and Move to Amend says, as horrific as that decision is, we welcome the clarity. We welcome the fact that more people are having to come to terms with the fact that we, the people, do not rule in this country, that there is an oligarchy. We are in a which side are you on moment. And regardless of where you may fall on the political spectrum, there is an awareness that if we don't unite and fight against the oligarchs, not only will they exploit and oppress us, they are literally going to destroy the planet that we depend upon for life itself. So I tell you, the Pacifica listener, I hope you will take a long, hard look at either Jill Stein, Green Party putative nominee, or Gary Johnson, Libertarian nominee. Stop voting for the corporatist, capitalist, imperialist parties who are taking us over a cliff. It really is that simple.
One of the points that I mentioned with Yanni Indigo yesterday, we didn't get a lot of time to explore it, and I think it's related to what you were just talking about, David, and that is, you know, when the Sanders campaign, and I hate to keep coming back to it, but the reason I do is because it was not a corporate-funded campaign. The average donations were pretty small.
$28.
Right, and it went very far, much, much further than most people expected. And when Sanders, you know, officially supported Hillary, he said that this is the most progressive platform I've ever seen. I went back because I was at the DNC in 2012, and so I went back and looked at the 2012 platform documents. And there's a lot of good stuff in the 2012 Democratic Party platform. There's some really good stuff in there. But then I went down the list of all the things in the DNC platform from 2012, and I tried to figure out how many of them had been aggressively pursued by the Obama administration, and I found really none. Some of this stuff is great. You know, Wall Street reform, disrupting and dismantling al-Qaeda, responsibly ending the war in Iraq and responsibly ending the war in Afghanistan, preventing the spread of nuclear weapons. I mean, there's so many things that sound great, but then you see what was actually done, especially when it came to things like reforming corporations and reforming elections. One of the things that's on there is campaign finance reform. I didn't see anything during 7+ years of the Obama presidency of any serious attempt by Democrats or Republicans to reform the campaign financing.
Because President Obama had the power through executive authority to actually require any company that was getting federal dollars to have to actually disclose. That he could have done that with an executive order. All the complaints about his executive order, not a single time was that done. Right. Let's just acknowledge the fact that Barack Obama had fantastic rhetoric, but terrible policies. We know that to be true. And here's the other thing. I don't mind you at all continuing to refer to the Sanders campaign because it was a phenomenon, right? I mean, Bernie Sanders didn't create this moment or this political call for a political revolution, he galvanized it. But Mark and Pacifica listeners, I want to remind you of something. A real political revolution cannot be run, R-U-N, in just one election cycle. A real political revolution cannot be won, W-O-N, by any one candidate, no matter how good he or she is. A real political revolution requires sustained energy that the Green Party has been doing for the last 20 years. It requires a commitment to a core set of principles and values and a program, an understanding of how power operates, a willingness to work in the streets, in the pool halls, in the bowling alleys, in the beauty salons, and in the streets and in the alleys in this country and at demonstrations and at the ballot box. I submit to you the Green Party represents something phenomenon. We don't claim to either be the movement. We claim to try to create the platform for people within the movement to go to the ballot box and think of the ballot box as another place of struggle, because that's what we're doing.
So I think that you might disagree with me on this, but I think one of the things that is making all of these things possible, the expansion of the Greens and Libertarians and the support of the Sanders campaign, and even a lot of the dissatisfaction that is fueling the Trump campaign, one of the key drivers of all of those things, I think, is a pretty substantial percentage. And again, I'm just getting this, I hate to sound like a Republican, but I feel like people are distrustful of the media to the extent that they're looking for sources of information elsewhere. And the internet and access to independent media, to blogs, to networks like Pacifica, to other possibilities beyond, you know, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, all those guys, is enabling people to find information that they can use to challenge what the media is telling them. And that this is what is, I think, justifiably supporting your stance that so-called libertarians or so-called conservatives or so-called liberals or so-called whatever label you want to put on people, the majority of us have much more in common than we do not.
Listen, I don't know what in the world would make you think that I would find that problematic or that I would challenge it. The reality is I know the difference between corporate media and actual journalism. So for me, I think you're absolutely right. I agree.
David, I want to ask you about Green Party organizing in the part of the United States you live in. I believe it's Humboldt County, California.
Correct.
Yeah, one thing I've become aware of here is what different challenges people from and Green parties from different parts of the country have to face. Bruce Dixon talked about their attempt to respond to the hunger strike in the prisons in Georgia a couple of years ago. And he said that they weren't really well organized. They weren't organized enough to respond to it as well as they would have liked to. So they're trying to get better organized. I talked to Sherry Honkala, and she was talking about helping people survive in a devastated post-industrial landscape in Kensington in Philadelphia. What's the Green Party in Humboldt?
Listen,
doing?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you actually naming and acknowledging the reality that where Greens are organizing are where people live, work, and play, right? And what we are talking about is a country that is polarizing, and poor are suffering in a way that we haven't seen since the 1930s in this country. And Greens are proud to be on the front lines of those communities. Most of us actually come out of those communities. One of the big things that people don't really respect and understand is that Greens are working class and poor people organizing for ourselves. Humboldt County is an interesting place, Anne, because if it wasn't for the pot economy, we would be Appalachia, right? But the pot economy is there, so you've got a very interesting thing going on. But because the Green Party has been so strong culturally, we have to acknowledge that Humboldt County exists and that pot economy exists because the back-to-the-land hippies of the late 60s and early 70s that went north to Mendocino County and Humboldt County had children, right? And they were living in communards, right? They were living in communes, and they were communards. They were cooperating together. And so here's what they did. They built K-Mud Radio, a shout-out to K-Mud Radio in Garberville, California, who I know is carrying this feed, my hometown now Pacifica member station. But they also built the Mateel Community Center. They built Beginnings, a child care center. They built the Senior Healy Center. And I'm talking about they built all this incredible network of ways to meet our needs together as a community. And so they shifted the culture, right, to a cooperating culture and creating institutions that met people's needs. So the Green Party was a very fertile place because there was already the culture of cooperation, of getting things done together without exploiting and oppressing. And so it was in Arcata, California, where the Green Party had its first ever majority on the city council in the 1990s. And it was the Green Party that actually helped to lead the fight against the Patriot Act. And check this out. You know, when the Patriot Act was imposed, many communities were passing those non-binding resolutions opposing the Patriot Act, right? We were very proud of that. Arcata, California, because of Dave Meserve, Green Party City Council member, was the only community that passed a binding local law that said, we hereby instruct the city attorney, the city police department, the librarian, and the city clerk not to comply with the following five provisions of the Patriot Act, which are an illegitimate violation of the constitutional rights of the citizens of Arcata. That's what it looks like when Greens are in power.
For people who might have forgotten, David, because it's been a while now since the Patriot Act was passed, a lot of it, we're still dealing with the legacy of much of it, and I think probably a lot of people don't know that there was many hundreds of pages of legislation that sort of miraculously appeared shortly after 9/11. A lot of it, I think, was probably sitting on the shelf somewhere waiting for the opportunity.
Well, and we have to remember, I'm going to just remind you also that Bill Clinton gave us the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1996 that the Patriot Act was built upon. So, you know, look, we just have to tell the truth. What we're talking about is a country that is becoming polarized, and the oligarchs are tightening their grip on us, not because they're meaner than the oligarchs of prior years.
It's because we're getting wiser.
Well, they're getting wiser. We're getting more militant. We are reaching a moment. I really believe, Mark and Pacific listeners, we are going to win everything or we're going to win nothing. I mean, I hate to sound melodramatic, but I genuinely believe with these crises, ecological, political, economic crises, we're living in a moment of systems failure. We have the opportunity to recreate our society or they will crush us. It really is that simple.
I just want to just remind people just for a second, because things are, as tends to happen at conventions, this is not unique to this convention at all. Things are running a little bit longer than we think that they were going to, or at least than they were supposed to. It's now 3:15 p.m. local time here in Houston. We were supposed to now be cutting away to audio of the vice presidential nominee's acceptance speech, but that's not happening yet because they're still doing the counts from the various states' delegations. So we're not
quite. I can tell you this delegate is from Washington State. So
we're close,
some good
we're close
news.
To the end. Alphabetical, I'm assuming, right?
Correct.
Okay, so we're getting close to the final tally. That I guess that means we're maybe 10, 12, 15 minutes perhaps from the vice presidential acceptance speech, which would put us 30 minutes or so away from the presidential acceptance speech. So we're running a little bit behind the schedule that we told you about at the beginning, which is not a surprise. We are still planning on having Dar Jamel and Greg Palast in the final 40-ish minutes of this broadcast. And, you know, we're still here, and we're going to be here until 5 p.m. Central Time, at which point I think Jill Stein, assuming she gets the nomination, will be giving a press conference. We're not going to be carrying it here, but I suspect you can find it somewhere online. I interrupted Anne, who was going to give us a thought or ask David a question. I just wanted to give people a quick update of where we were because this is it's a long broadcast and I don't want you to lose track of what's going on.
I just wanted to throw in something that's key to Jill's platform that I haven't heard mentioned today. She says she would cut the military budget in half immediately, which is not to say she would throw a lot of people out of work. She would put everybody to work on the Green New Deal.
Yes.
And building a sustainable infrastructure.
Well, and I'm glad that you talked about this because there's a couple of things here. So many times when we talk about we want universal education available through university for free. We want universal health care. We want a new society, and we've got a vision that would allow everyone to live a meaningful, productive life, do meaningful, productive work. Some people say, oh, there's not money for that. And that's ridiculous. This economy has produced more wealth and more money than ever in the history of the world. Most of it is going. The problem is we have an allocation crisis where the oligarchs are just sucking up all the money. And the second thing is, as you've named, the bloated military-industrial complex sucks up the overwhelming share of U.S. tax dollars. All we have to do is cut the military budget by about 50%, have an actual defense. Right. Instead of an offensive imperial foreign policy, just have a defensive posture. And we have literally trillions with a T, trillions of dollars available to invest in infrastructure, to invest in bridges and roads, to invest in alternative sustainable energy development so we can wean ourselves off of coal and oil and nuclear power and towards wind and geothermal and solar and tidal power. The technology exists, and all we need is the political will to implement it. And again, that's the reason we're trying to encourage Pacifica listeners to vote green or libertarian. We have to break this two-party system that has actually got a stranglehold on the solutions that exist.
The two-party system, to some extent, feels like it's imploding anyway, right?
I mean, that's to be sure.
My observation, at least of the Republican Party, is that this could be for a while the last time the Republicans put up a viable candidate.
Listen, here's what I think. I think that both in the Democratic and the Republican parties, we are actually witnessing their collapse, right, from the inside. Think about this.
The Democrats, to me, seem still very organized. The
Bernie Sanders
right now.
And Donald Trump represent the same phenomenon. Maverick campaigns from the base of their own parties who were rising up, and the reality is that the leadership of both the Democratic and Republican parties tried to squash and undermine both of those campaigns.
Right.
Bernie Sanders was targeted by the Democratic National Committee, colluded by Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
yeah.
Right? We know that that happened. That absolutely happened. And he still almost won. Trump barely won, right? So we have two different phenomenons within the same party. Now, when you say that the Democrats seem to be more organized, I would only say this. Their funders are still lined up. Trump is experiencing something interesting, which is he's got seems to have bigger constituencies, but the funders of the Republican Party find him reprehensible. The Democratic Party have lost all of their constituencies, but their funders are still lined up behind them. So I see your point, but I'll say it's a little more complicated, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, if I'm still maybe thinking that somehow between now and November that the Republicans are going to, as a party, this is, are going to find a way to not have Trump be their presidential candidate. I don't know if that's a possibility or not, but
well, I mean,
it seems like some people are trying within the party to make
I
that
have
happen.
Heard it floated that Donald Trump is already looking for a way to get out. And so I see my sister Kat Swift is coming over, so I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to Pacific listeners, but what I would love to do, because I know that we're short on time, is to give up this seat and this microphone to Kat Swift so that she can come and give some of her thoughts. I want to thank Pacifica for the opportunity
to
have this conversation. I want to thank you, the Pacifica listener and supporter. Remember the Nearing the Next Pledge Drive. Even if you didn't like what you heard from me, remember that the only reason you hear conversation like this is because this is listener-supported, listener-supported, listener-owned radio.
Thanks so much, David Cobb, former presidential candidate for the Green Party. Obviously very busy himself with this convention as it goes on, and we are joined... We don't know how many minutes for, because we're waiting to, you know, the acceptance speeches are supposed to have already started and they haven't. But we're joined by Kat. I'm afraid we haven't met before. My name is Mark.
Kat, I was formerly known as Kat Swift, but now my name is Katya Gruna.
Well, Katya, it's a pleasure to have you on Pacifica's airwaves.
Thank you.
What can you, I'm assuming, Anne, you know something, or Otis knows something about this?
He knows how to make the Greens win.
Right, I guess Otis basically, I think he heard you summarizing some key points about a strategy for the Green Party to actually win, and he wanted, rather than record it and play a recording, to, as we like to do on Pacifica, to get actually live audio from the source. So what? How can the Greens actually win?
Well, honestly, I don't remember what he thinks
what
he heard.
But
in Texas, you know, we have a ballot access situation where we have to get 5% to stay on the ballot in 2018. And but really it comes down to, you know, people are like, oh, can you win? Well, of course, right? There's only like, what, 10% of the population actually vote? So,
especially in primaries.
Exactly. Yeah. In Texas, in the primaries, only less than 10% voted in both each of them. So less 20% of the registered voters, right? So 80% of the registered voters don't vote. If all of those, even if half of those people actually went out and voted, then the Democratic Republican Party wouldn't exist anymore, right? They would not have power, except for the few seats where there aren't a Libertarian or a Green candidate. I've been, you know, really working with the Libertarian Party because we have so much common ground, and that if we actually would stop as a population either not voting because we think there's no option and or keep voting for the Democrats and Republicans, then we actually could change the system in a peaceful way through the vote. Now, I know that the vote is corrupt and all of that. We don't know if they're controlling our voting machines, etc. But a landslide always will undo a rigged election according to black box voting, etc. So I think that may be what I was talking about.
Yeah,
that
I mean, you said it almost too quickly, I think, for most people to pick up on. So I want to circle back just because I think
sure.
This is very important. The two party primaries that happened, we're talking strictly about Texas now, but I think this applies way beyond Texas. This is broadly true for a lot of states, that a fairly small minority of people, roughly 8 to 16% of the registered voters vote in any party primary across the country. And so what you're saying is that, you know, in the case of Texas, but again, broadly true in most other states as well, if maybe a third or a half of the registered voters who don't bother to show up at all show up and vote in primaries for either Greens or Libertarians or some other non-Republican, non-Democratic party.
Well, not in primaries. Show up on Election Day.
Oh, on Election
this
Day.
This Election Day, if you showed up, and on if you're registered to vote and you didn't vote, or you don't vote, right? The point
which is still the majority.
Right. If half of you show up on Election Day and vote, and I know it's hard to show up on Election Day, but early voting is where most voter fraud is committed by the state. So I always encourage people to vote on Election Day. You technically can't get fired, but, you know, I know how it is. So the idea is that if half the people who are registered to vote that don't vote actually went out and voted for Greens and Libertarians and or Greens and or Libertarians, then the entire power dynamic of this country would change. And
in about a 2-to-1 ratio.
Exactly. So, you know, we would.
I think the last presidential election for Barack Obama, and the turnout tends to be a little bit low, and there's an incumbent already in office. I think it was 37% actually voted.
And it wasn't much higher when in 2008.
Right.
I think it was still less than 50%.
Yeah.
So,
but in 2008, those were unprecedented. We now have to go back.
Exactly. Yeah. Unprecedented high numbers was less than 50%. So, you know.
Yeah, 50% shouldn't be something to brag about.
Exactly.
So 36% in the last election. I mean, I'm actually struggling to kind of get a handle on what this election is going to do. I think it's either going to be a huge turnout or it's going to be a almost zero turnout.
Well, it seems that most people are not wanting to turn out, right? Because they're just like, they're finally seeing the true colors of the red and blue parties. And they don't want either of it. And so they don't want to go out and vote because that's what they think they're all there is. You know, but in at least 47 states, there will be another option. And this is for the majority of the American population. So if people understood that there is another option, that they don't have to stay home and they don't have to vote red or blue, they can vote green or yellow and actually win. We could take over Congress, state legislatures, county commissioner courts, you know, all the way down to JP seats if people actually just turned out.
I want to remind listeners that we are in an open room with a system that is piping sound in that's out of our control. So that's the reason why we sound a little bit odd every now and then, because there is a delegate vote count going on in the background. We were the last check at Washington, so I think we're supposed to be getting close to the end. And at the end of those votes, we will have the formal acceptance speeches by the two two people on the Green Party ticket. And that would be, we think, Ajmal Baraka and Jill Stein. As soon as that happens, specifically when Ajmal Baraka steps on stage and gives his acceptance speech, and I hate to say that it's already done, but, you know, it's looking that way. The votes, I've been following along mostly. And it's leaning in that direction, and we will break to that as soon as we can, or as soon as we have to. Kat, before we let you go, and I think this is an important point to maybe expand on a little bit. If in 47 states, you said, and we were speaking earlier, Anne had a map that we were looking at and describing that she told people all the states where the Greens are already registered, already on the ballot, or can already be written in, officially recognized as a write-in candidate. How do the Greens or the Libertarians fight what I think is perhaps the biggest obstacle of all of this? And that is getting people to know that that's even a possibility.
Media coverage.
Because of the delay. Just keep going. Ignore that.
Media coverage.
I mean, if you want people to know, then that's the only way, right? But it has to be on the most mainstream way, in which is television. It needs to be on the most watched stations, most watched news programs, and how do we get into
congratulations
that?
To Dr. Jill Stein.
Well, you hear in the background, congratulations to Dr. Jill Stein. So I guess that means the vote is now finally official. Looking at the convention floor, it looks like Ajmal Baraka and Jill Stein will be beginning their acceptance speeches. We're running about 15 minutes later than we originally had intended, or actually than the Green Party had originally intended. And so that means if the speeches are the length that we were told to be expecting, that Ajmal Baraka will be starting in the next 2 or 3 minutes, finishing at about 3:45. Jill Stein will go from then until roughly 4 o'clock. These times are all central. We'll bring you both of those speeches live. Just a reminder that you're listening to the Pacifica Network's live coverage, and live radio is a little bit unpredictable. We're coming to you from the University of Houston. The Green Party is wrapping up their convention tomorrow, and I think the speech, the acceptance speech by the vice presidential candidate, is going to be introduced here in just
great
a second.
Great job, everyone.
Green Party
well
vice presidential nominee Sherry Honkler from 2012 is on stage. Are we gonna go to that audio?
When they start, yeah.
As soon as we. Do you have anything more to add, Kat, before we get back to the convention?
Social media is really important in this as well, right? I mean, if you're not going to get mainstream news coverage, then people need to, if they know about this and want to spread it, then they need to spread it through all of their channels. Whatever you do, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever media you use, create your own media. This is a grassroots movement. Get out the word to your people, and it will spread from there.
And if the Sanders campaign has taught us anything, it's that grassroots campaigns can work.
I want to add something regarding the winning strategy.
Go ahead, Ann.
I want to add something regarding the winning strategy. Jill Stein has said over and over that there are 43 million college students in college debt, weighed down by college debt. With very
43
little hope
million.
Of, 43 million. With very little hope of ever getting out of it. She wants to abolish student debt, and 43 million is enough to win the election.
Exactly.
That's, yeah. Well, I mean, how many of those are over 18?
Most college students are 18 or older.
Okay. Yeah. Just yeah. I just wanted to make sure. I don't have the right to vote in America because I'm not a citizen, but, you know, one day that'll happen. So... That seems like the constituency, right, Kat, for a lot of this movement, a lot of the younger generation, people who are, you know, in their 30s or below, seem to be very dissatisfied with media coverage, seem to be increasingly reaching out to non-conventional forms of media, and are certainly consuming their media in ways that their parents and grandparents don't. They don't stay up and watch the primetime news.
Oh, exactly. And also, they... You know, well, I'm on the edge of that generation.
Well, I'm out of that generation, yeah, but I'm
but
looking at my younger peers.
We know, right, that this has been corrupt our whole lives, and that all the things they've told us over the years about, you know, conservation of our environment and all of this stuff is real. Our people in the office haven't done anything. And so, yeah, young people are pissed and are saying, y'all have screwed us and we want something better. And so what better way than to take it to the ballot box and say, we're done with you people.
Yeah.
One of the first people I met here when I arrived was the young creator of the Jill Stein Dank Meme Stash page on Facebook. He said he'd been to college for a year and a half. He was $20,000 in debt, and he had to go home to move in with mom until he could afford to go back to school.
Yeah, and I was lucky because I went to school in the early 90s, and I only went into $10,000 of debt for 1 year. I guess it's about the same, right? But still, like, I'm still paying for that college debt now. It's been 20 years.
I guess I got lucky because I went to college in the UK, where I didn't have to acquire a whole lot of student debt. It's a very different system.
Right.
And something, you know, one of the things that David Cobb was saying earlier about, you know, we want health care, not health insurance. We want health, universal health care. And we want, he's speaking for, you know, I think probably the majority of people would like to have access to health care. We want college education and so on, and how the money doesn't exist for those things. This is the only country in the sort of so-called Western modern industrial world that doesn't have these things.
Exactly.
Every country in Europe has these things.
Yeah, but we spend so much money on the military-industrial prison pipeline, a military-industrial prison complex, that we don't have money to spend on our people to make sure that they have housing, food, clothing, education, healthcare. We would rather go to war all over the world and oppress people than take care of our own people.
Well, I don't think we would.
No, you're right. We wouldn't, but our
decision makers, the decision makers,
the Republican and Democratic Party and their candidates that are elected are the ones that I mean by we.
Yeah, it's the discourse is hijacked, and I don't know who it was who said truth is the first victim of war, the first casualty of war. We'll have to have to find out who that is and tell you who it is.
I'll look it up.
The audio in the background right now is Sherry Honkeler. You might be able to hear some of it. She was Green Party vice presidential nominee in 2012. And are we ready yet to break to the floor and hear Ajamo? Not yet. Okay. We have. We've got some clips from Bill Crozier. Bill was here yesterday and went around speaking to all sorts of people at the convention, many of them delegates, some of them simply attendees. But he asked them a series of questions, and we've got several minutes of audio of that to listen to. Bill, if you're listening, thank you for doing that.
My name is Henry Lawrence. I'm from Panama City, Florida.
And why are you here?
I have been involved with the Green Party since 2000. And I've been a Florida delegate to the National Party. That's why I'm here. I'm actually a delegate from representing Florida I'm actually from Northwest Florida. I live in Panama City. But I've been a delegate to the National Party on three different occasions, and this is my third stint as a delegate. So this is my third trip. A national convention.
So how does this convention compare to the others so far?
It's hot outside. since I live in this part of the country, live in Florida, Northwest Florida, the climate's about the same. But as far as people, it seems to be pretty well organized. The beauty of this convention is that because of the fact that Bernie Sanders stirred up so much energy within the younger people of this country, who many of them probably never.
You're listening to Pacifica's coverage of the Green Party convention. We just heard on our audio Sherry Honkeler's introduction of Ajamo Baraka. He is walking out onto the convention floor right now, and we're going to carry his speech for you live. Here it is.
Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. Let me bring to you today that man that's going to help us go forward in our journey towards freedom, Ajamo Baraka, the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party.
Are you ready to make history? I said, are you ready to make history? My brothers and sisters, I have to say that I am so honored to be with you this afternoon. It's been a tremendous experience these last couple of days. But before I get into my remarks, please allow me to thank my dear sister, Sherry. I want y'all to understand something. She talks about human rights and the role that I play, but you know, when they write the history of the evolution of the human rights movement here in this country, front and center will be our dear sister, believe me. I have to admit, though, I told Dr. Stein that, you know, running with me is not going to be as adventurous as running with Sherry. Because you all know when you run with Sherry, you better be ready to go to jail. See, I try to avoid jail myself, you know. But again, running with Sherry, it can happen. We was in New York at the, what year was that? The National Convention? We were one of those illegal gatherings, and they told Sherry that there would be no marches, no permits.
But of course, they organized the rally anyway, and the police surrounded the square because they're going to try to contain us. Now, you know, I had a chance to speak, and so I saw what was happening. So I said, "I'm going to speak, and then I'm getting out of here." But you know what? The people were coming out, and more people came, and the police barricades were pushed further and further back. And I was like watching, okay, let's see what's going to happen. And the people were ready to step off, and Sherry put everybody in line. She said, "We stepping off." And I said, "You know, when the masses are moving like this, you got to be with the masses." And I joined that line with them. And we walked, and it was the only successful non-permanent or permanent march at that convention. That is my sister, Sherry. Let me thank also the organizers of these last couple of days. As an event planner, I know how difficult it is to organize these events. Let me thank the conference delegates. You all did a tremendous job. You took your responsibilities seriously. So let me thank you. Let me thank the Green Party in general for your consistency, for always being there and raising the critical questions and being the vehicle for progressive politics. And last but not least, let me thank my leader, Jill Stein. Brothers and sisters, friends, we are at a critical moment, as Jill says, a transformational moment. We have tremendous opportunities before us. The American people are longing for a change. They are ready to do something different. And we have to be the vehicle for that difference. You know, there are difficult conditions that the people face. You know, they tell us that there has been a recovery and things are all right from the crisis. But you know what? There are millions of people who we work with, who haven't experienced any kind of recovery. There are millions of people who still don't have a place to lay their head at night. There's a reason why the fastest growing population of homeless people Black women with children. There are millions of people who would like to have a job where they can live a decent life, but they don't have it. And if they have a job, then basically they are making starvation wages. They're working two and three different jobs just to make ends meet. But they tell us things are better. We have a situation where, as a consequence of austerity across this country, in communities where we live and work, they're closing down schools. People live in communities where they can't go to the store because there's no store. So you have like 48 million people who are living in situations where they are going to bed every night hungry. We have a situation where basically, even with so-called Obamacare, we have millions still without health care. These are difficult conditions. Difficult conditions. And people are wondering why. Why do we have to accept this kind of situation? And so when the two parties attempt to try to herd people based on fear, we find that today there are millions of people who are prepared to do something different, who are prepared to go another way. And we are going to be there to provide that opportunity for a new day and another way. There are people all over this country engaged in struggle who believe that we shouldn't have schools closing, who believe that we all have a right to be healthy, who believe that education should be something that's going to enhance our human dignity and our spirits, who believe that people should not be going to bed hungry or walking the streets without some place to live, who believe that women have a right to their bodies and bodily integrity, who believe that trans people have a right to live in dignity and with equal rights. There are people engaged in struggle all around this world building social movements. And part of that motion, they're looking at how do we relate to the electoral process? How do we look at electoral processes as part of a larger strategic plan? And there are many people saying that in terms of building power, we can look critically at how we advance our efforts through the electoral process. And when they look for that alternative, we have to be there. We have to have the possibility for them to be able to express themselves politically on the green ballot lines across this country. That's why it's so vitally important that we get as many votes as we can, that we run this election with the intent that we have, which is basically to win. My brothers and sisters, I've lived my entire life committed to the notion of independent politics, building alternative power. I understood that basically we had some real possibilities in advancing that struggle for political independence using the electoral process. And that's where Dr. Stein and the Green Party comes in for me personally. Because you all get it. Dr. Stein understands that you can't transform a system without struggle. That you have to organize the people. That the electoral process is in fact a process about how we build power. And for me, that is what is attractive to this process and was the basis for me accepting when Dr. Stein called and said, "Ajamu, are you ready to join me?" And I said, "Dr. Stein, I thought about it. I know where you're coming from, and you can count me in. I'm with you." It is that commitment to building popular power. It is that commitment to the people. It is that understanding that we have to build a multinational movement here in this country based on the needs and the aspirations of working people that I joined this effort. We don't lie to the people. It's a campaign that says no compromise, no retreat, and no fear. My brothers and sisters, you know, we don't always, we're not in a position to determine the historical conditions that we are born in. But we can determine how we respond to those conditions. And for us, for many of us, we have determined that we are going to fight. So I stand here before you to tell you that the Stein-Baraka campaign, we are committed to fight. We are committed to fight not just for you, but with you. We understand that it is a collective process. We understand that all we have to keep us back is ourselves. So I pledge to you, my brothers and sisters, that we're going to do all that we can to advance this movement. We're going to give it everything that we have. As our dear sister and leader says, it is in fact in our hands. Let's make history. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Now, my friends, it is indeed my honor, my pleasure, to bring before you someone who really needs no introduction. Someone who has been a freedom fighter all her life. Someone who I've seen work night and day for all of us. Someone whose dedication is something to be admired. I've been on this adventure for just a couple of days, and I have even more respect for Dr. Stein now. So, with no more delay, please, my friends, brothers and sisters, join me in bringing out and showing our love for the next President of the United States, Dr. Jill Stein.
Democracy looks like, and we are what political revolution looks like. And thank you, thank every one of you. Thank you, Ajamu, for that incredible inspiration. Thank you to every one of you for being here and leading the charge for an America and a world that works for all of us. And I want to agree with everything that Ajamu said and everything that Sherry said and agree with all of their thank yous. I want to reiterate them and just add to that A big thank you to Lynn Serpy, who's been running the show here. And a big thank you to Tama Yeager and to Hillary Kane and to the Harris County Green Party for making this amazing convention possible. I'm honored beyond words to be your candidate, and I'm so honored to be running for president of the United States with the Green Party, the only party of, by, and for the people. That is what we are. We have been ahead of the curve in so many ways, on climate change, on green energy, on demilitarization, on marriage equality, on free public higher education and canceling student debt, on stopping the Trans-Pacific Partnership, on ending the war on drugs and the incarceration state, on providing reparations for slavery and to the indigenous people of this nation, on opposing war crimes committed by Saudi Arabia in Yemen, and war crimes and occupation committed by the Israeli government in Palestine, and so much more. We have been ahead of the curve for decades, and all of us I want to again recognize the heroes who have kept the party going through thick and thin. So again, stand up if you are part of a state, local, or national Green Party organization, and a big thank you to you. And again, a big thank you. It is such an honor to be also running in alliance with the Bernie Sanders movement that I now hear called as Burning Green. Burning Green, we are burning green together. We owe you such a debt of gratitude for lifting up this revolution that has been smoldering for decades. You broke through the media blackout. You lifted us up, and you refuse to be shut down by the DNC. So please stand. Stand so we can thank you from the Bernie campaign. Thank you so much. Together we are unstoppable. Thank you so much. It's an honor, again, to be running alongside of Ajamu Baraka, a powerhouse of human rights, who brings a lifetime of dedication and his powerful voice. And I have to thank Cornel West, who has been an incredible hero for all of us for so long, who has broken free. It's such an honor to have him in one of our two first commercials, speaking to the world. I don't know if people have seen him yet, but he made such a powerful speech, which is out there now on the TV. And when I walked to the airport, when I arrived and walked up to the curbside check-in, and I gave to the brothers who were manning the curbside check-in, I gave them my ID card, and they said to me, "Are you the Jill Stein?" I knew they had heard the voice of Cornel West speaking to the broad community that has not been able to hear our message before. So thank you, brother. I am so inspired to have religion on this campaign. And I also am so honored to run along with the inspired state and local candidates who are also running for office and bringing our message of people, planet, and peace. Please stand. Stand if you are running for office so we can thank you and recognize you for carrying this fight into our communities. We are in this together.
You're listening to Pacifica's live coverage of the Green Party's National Convention. We are running a little bit late. The speeches are running late, so we're going to take our break now for stations to identify themselves. Please remember to support your local station, your affiliate, your Pacifica Network founding member, their five stations, and all of the other affiliates that are listening. Join us. Stay with us.
You are listening to live coverage of the Green Party National Convention in Houston, Texas, from Pacifica Radio on your local community radio station. Community radio brings you voices of ordinary people trying to make changes at the grassroots. It is independent, people-powered radio, and it deserves your support.
Radio is a way of getting the word out to people who can't get it from commercial radio, which has all but withered away and become unlistenable. And they can't get it from religious broadcasters who have a very narrow, distorted perspective when it comes to news events. And they can't get it from television, which has been dumbed down. And they can't get it from newspapers that are dying off. So community radio is an extremely important